Well, good afternoon. Yeah, welcome to Express Yourself, where arts, culture, and conversations intersect. I'm your host, Amy Kimberly, and I'm kind of here all alone, except luckily I have Kathleen Shannon in with me for just a little bit, so do stay tuned. I have a great team, a great show lined up here. Today we'll be talking with Amanda Watkins, orchestra director, and Ian Pasternak, a young composer who will be premiering his original work at New Hope Church in Newcastle on March 5th and 6th. So that's amazing. Also joining us will be Kelly Thompson, Symphony in the Valley conductor, and Ruth Molman, the president. Also on the show, and I am really excited about this, we've got part one of a two-part conversation with Denver drag queen Mirage. You know, Mirage was part of our first virtual First Fridays back in the spring, and stringer DJ Mama Bird digs a little deeper into the life of a drag queen. And Laura Whitley calls in to update on all things Imagine Climate 2021, which kicks off March 1st. So don't touch that dial. All right, Kathleen.
Hello, Amy.
Here we are, Friday afternoon, the final weekend of February.
Oh, and so much in store for this coming weekend, it sounds like. Excited to hear more. And happy to officially welcome you on board into the Express Yourself programming here on KD&K.
Yay.
Yeah, Luke Nessler, of course, has been doing that for quite a while, but we're sort of bringing it full circle back to you and a bunch of the other hosts from the Carbondale Creative District. We heard Brian Colley on last week and DJ Mama Bird, of course. You'll be hearing her voice later in the show today, too. And how many other hosts do we have coming in here in the next few weeks?
Oh, gosh. We're going to hear from Stacey Dickerson, and Brian Colley has got a few more in the can. And we have part two next week of Allie's interview with Mirage. Megan Jansen is interviewing some New York dancers that are going to be having a residency here. Yeah. So a lot is coming up, a lot to look forward to.
Great. Well, we're so excited here at KD&K to have all these different artistic voices on the air, bringing you happenings from all over the valley and perhaps even beyond as travel allows, you guys really settle into Express Yourself. So thanks so much for being here.
All right. Well, thanks for having us. And we do thank Luke so much. He was my mentor. We kind of started together back in the days, and I think we'll hear Luke occasionally on this show as well.
Oh,
so
I imagine.
Stay tuned, everybody.
Tuned into the art world as well.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Thank you, Kathleen. All right. Well, we're going to start with just a little music from Mozart. What can put you more in the mood? Now, Mozart, I believe, wrote Symphony No. 1 when he was 8 years old. And we only bring this up because we are going to be talking to Amanda Watkins, director of Symphony in the Valley, along with Ian Pasternak, a young composer who is premiering his original work at New Hope Church in Newcastle. And he will also be performing with a fellow composer that is also premiering his work, Taylor Reed. It's amazing, right here in our little valley, that we could have two premieres, especially coming out of the strange year that we've come out. So I am going to unmute everybody. We're going to try this new way of a new way of doing things in this time of COVID, and bring on our young composer, Ian, along with a fine slew of folks from Symphony in the Valley. Besides Amanda, we also have Ruth Molman and Kelly Thompson. So, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hello, Amy.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Let me turn you up. So, let's first give our listeners just a little glimpse into what Symphony in the Valley does.
Hi, this is Amanda Watkins, and I'm the manager for Symphony in the Valley. We are a nonprofit musical group. We have been operating and playing together for 28 years, and all of our musicians are volunteers, and we play symphonic music, orchestral music, classical music, lots of different types of music. And so, yeah.
Yeah, which, and how, you know, honestly, coming out of this past year, which we all know we had to do so many things differently, and here you are presenting two live concerts, which I just know people are hungry for. How did this come to be?
Well, when COVID first hit, we had to cancel a couple of concerts, and it was very disheartening for a while for us. And we kind of scrambled. We didn't want to stop playing music together. And so we started with some virtual performances, and that was pretty fun. But we got together, we made a plan, and we found a venue, the New Hope Church in Newcastle.
Uh-oh, did we lose you?
And they were graciously offered us a place to play.
All right.
And we were able to socially distance and wear masks. And we've had a couple of live concerts through the summer and the fall successfully. In the winter, we had a holiday concert as well.
Very lucky. Well, Ian, hi. He's waving, everybody. You're on radio. So let's start. I mean, where did this passion for music come from?
I actually put a lot of thought into these questions, and to be completely honest, I actually don't have a clear answer for where my passion came from. I wasn't raised as a music student. I just, like lots of other students, I grew up in elementary music class, where we were just kind of playing recorders, learning about classical rock, et cetera. And, you know, I went to the middle school band, played different instruments, trying to find one that was fitting to me. And I stuck with the contrabass clarinet, and now I'm at the high school. And throughout digging into that, there's not a clear answer where my passion came from, because I'm just another student. Because I was switching between so many instruments, I couldn't find one that was fitting to me. So that a lot of those instruments were seen as uncommon. Like, you wouldn't expect to see a tuba in a fifth grade band or a bassoon in a sixth grade band. And I liked the unusual, and that very much was unusual for an ensemble like that. And that's the best answer I have.
That's a great answer. I mean, look, and I can see your instrument behind you, at least one of them. So how did that lead to composing, though? That's a big step. Many, many people play instruments all their life and never compose a piece. what led you to composing something?
Like this starts kind of back in elementary school, I guess. My dad just happens to have this keyboard sitting around, and I would goof off on it a lot. And I suppose, you know, I wasn't learning any music. I was just playing entirely for myself. And I suppose after a long enough time, that developed into a composition kind of passion, I guess. I didn't start properly composing until the summer after sixth grade, where I wrote some pieces that, of course, looking back on them, they, you know, I've grown a lot. And I'm still not sure. I think part was because I played so many instruments, which allowed me to learn how each instrument worked.
Yeah, well, how many, what instruments do you play?
Right now I focus on synthesizer, contrabass clarinet, and contra alto clarinet. However, I also started on tuba, euphonium, baritone, trombone, trumpet. Then I went to some more standard clarinets, started saxophone, started other so many things, and I stuck with probably the rarest set, no, not the rarest, second rarest instrument in the modern concert band. The first rarest instrument being the bass saxophone, which I really would hope to get one myself.
Wow. Well, I mean, you're practically a symphony yourself. Ruth, I believe that you're not only an accomplished musician yourself, but also the president of the board for Symphony in the Valley. And you also have maybe a special relationship with Taylor Reed. Can you tell us, I believe you're his grandma, his Nana?
I am. And yes, I play the flute. I have since I was 5 years old, and I have a degree. So my grandson, who is Taylor Reed, was raised in a musical family his whole life. And he just kind of grew up with music in his bones. And he started to compose about 5 years ago. And he's done jazz and some little quips that he's got online. But then he moved into writing for movies, and he's entered some competitions. And so my challenge to Taylor when he turned 15 was to write a piece for a full symphony, which he did and accomplished in a year. And then I brought that piece to Kelly, our musical director and conductor, and asked him if it would be possible to include Taylor's piece with our symphony performances. I thought it was very well done. And I knew we had another young composer within our symphony itself, which is Ian. And Kelly can probably take it from there.
Yeah. What was it like working with these young composers?
I thought it was just a lot of fun. Ian has worked with us for a few years. He's done some arrangements. In fact, that started with Holst's second suite in F, and that went over well. It was originally written for military bands, so had him do that. Actually, he had done it, and it was something I'd been wanting to do, an orchestral version of it. Just was curious if that had ever been done, and was actually talking about it with our librarian on a trip home, and literally within a few days Ian came back with that. So he had done that, and the idea came from Ruth to do this concert. And so I'd gotten a lot of Ian's compositions in the past and had just kind of said, you know, we need to come up with the time to put these in. And then this idea came out, and this is where it went. We went with a concert just to focus on these guys, and here we are.
It's amazing. Wow, how exciting. And Kelly, what is it like just overall? This is what you do year in and year out. You get to work with youth from throughout the valley on different programs. I mean, it just sounds like an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, well, our symphony is people of all ages, from, you know, our youngest right now is 12 all the way up to, well, we won't say, but older than 12. So, yeah, we run the gamut of musicians, and that's the beauty of a community orchestra is we're able to let people who love music come and join us no matter where they're at, and we have a good time. It's just people who love making music, and that's what it's all about.
That's wonderful. So, Ian, for you, do you see yourself staying in classical music? Are you fond? Do you have passions in other areas? I mean, that synthesizer could take you all over the place.
I see myself still following classical music, but not older types of classical music. Some of my favorite composers are like 20th century composers. Some include Philip Glass, Steve Reich, wow, Karlheinz Stockhausen, Yannis Xenakis, John Adams. Like those, that's what I like most about music. I see myself working in numerous different fields. I don't want to particularly stick in one field of classical music. Like, even if I become a complete modernist and don't write in older styles, I would like to at least write a piece now and then that has some sort of resemblance to Beethoven or Haydn. And I'm honestly not sure where I'm heading. I would like to try lots of things, and I suppose after long enough time, I will get the answer.
That's the way life is, which is fantastic. So now you have been listening, and I would imagine rehearsing with the symphony, your composition. How does it sound? How does it feel?
Sounds good. It's fun.
Yeah,
I didn't think this would happen this soon, but it did happen this soon. And I'm very thankful for them. The thing that gives me the best feeling is performing a piece and having the audience go wild. Or, I mean, I wouldn't really want to say wild because sometimes applauses aren't that strong for whatever reason. But, you know, I like, it's fun performing a piece and having the audience enjoy it. And it's very rewarding to all the musicians. And it's just a great feeling. And having my own piece be in that spot, just, it feels great. Mm-hmm. I haven't felt it yet, but I'm excited.
Well, everybody, watch out for the names Ian Pasternak and Taylor Reed, right? Because these are two young composers that are going to be around a long time. I get that feeling. Can one of you give us details on the upcoming concert, where to get tickets, and actually how our audience can connect to Symphony in the Valley year-round?
Yeah, this is Amanda again. We encourage everyone to go to our website to start. It's SITV or symphonyinvalley.org. And from there, you can view, you can purchase tickets for this upcoming concert. And you can see upcoming concerts that we have. And, you know, on that note, with the community, we are always looking for musicians. Sometimes, you know, we'll have one concert series that people can't make it for whatever reasons. And so we're always looking for fresh new musicians, and most ability levels and ages are welcome. Well, all ages are welcome, of course. You got to know how to play the instrument to start. But yeah, just our website, and that's our main way to get out to the community. And of course, just coming to our events. Just come if you've never been before. We would love for you to come and see what we do and meet the musicians.
Well, that's wonderful. What are some upcoming plans this summer? Are there going to be some more concerts? And do you know where yet, or will we just have to stay tuned?
Yeah, well, we have our Young Composers Concert is of course March 5th and 6th, and then we're going to have our Symphony Swing on Mother's Day. We usually have that at the Hotel Colorado with a big, dinner gala, but because of COVID, we're going to, hold off. But we are going to still play some swing music. It's a great event, it's a popular event of the year, and that'll also be at the New Hope Church in Newcastle on the Mother's Day weekend. And then for the summer, we're really hoping to play for the 4th of July in Rifle and Glenwood Springs. That's an annual thing for us.
Nice. Well, we'll look out for you. I really appreciate all of your time. And wish you great luck, Ian. We will be looking out for you. And Ruth, thank you for coming on. I wish we could have had Taylor here as well. But you are obviously, I assume, playing in the piece that he composed. Is that correct?
Yes, I will be. And I'm so excited. And Taylor is very emotional about getting his piece performed by a live symphony orchestra. This is a privilege of a lifetime, really, for these young composers.
Oh, thank you so much for being with us. Kelly, I'm sure you're going to be a very busy man in the coming weeks. So good luck to you all. And thank you for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
This is great. All right, folks. That was Symphony in the Valley, and you can find all their information out there at Symphony in the Valley or SITV.org. All right, you are tuned in to KDNK. This is Express Yourself. I'm your host, Amy Kimberly, and it's just coming on about 25 after 4. I'm going to play a little music as we get... Whoa, you do not want to miss. Coming up next, it is DJ Mama Bird and Drag Queen Mirage. Just a lovely Friday afternoon up there, and I hope you were enjoying the symphony written by Mozart when he was 8 years old. So you just never know what talents come at what age. It sometimes you're just born with it. And we were born with lots of great juju right here in the Roaring Fork Valley. It's the final weekend of February. And when COVID first started, and honestly, I'm feeling like these are the weeks when it did first start, and it started coming into our consciousness a year ago, or at least mine. I had heard about China and these things happening elsewhere, but we were deep in rehearsing for the fashion show, getting ready for a big event. And it just didn't seem like that was something that was going to happen here. So now, every week in the final weeks of February leading up to that March 8th, I remember well, date when really the whole country just had to shut down, the whole world shut down, and this journey through a pandemic really began in earnest. So I do want to honor this time, and as a time that I just remember every day, and I'm so grateful that we are all here together and we've gotten through this, and to also honor all the people we have lost. And you will see many flags at half mast, and I believe that is to honor those that we have lost now that we've hit the 500,000 mark. But one thing we did back then, after we got through reeling from the craziness of quarantine and being shut down, was we started having virtual First Fridays. And, you know, since it was virtual, we could bring anyone into our little community and share them with them. And one person that we brought in, thanks to Ali Sanguili, is a drag queen from Denver called Mirage. And Mirage joined us on Thunderstream. She performed. And I mean, the makeup alone, the time it took her to get ready to perform with us was probably way longer than the time she had to perform. It was such a gift, just such a gift. And Ali Sanguili, she's also a gift, otherwise known as DJ Mama Bird, met up with Mirage and really went deep into what it's like to be a drag queen. Also, what it's like to compete in the drag queen world, which will be in part two. So this is part one of a two-part interview. Enjoy.
Okay, this is DJ Mama Bird, and this is Express Yourself. Today we are talking about drag, one of my favorite things in the world. And we are here with the amazing Miss Mirage Delamore Shears. Thank you for being here, Mirage.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm so thrilled to have you here and be able to represent you and the world of drag on KDNK. It's going to be a great interview for our listeners. Before we get to the fun stuff, we'll have to ask some basic questions to Mirage so that our listeners know more about you. But why don't you just introduce yourself and tell us who Mirage is and who is Mirage under the drag?
Well, thank you. Well, Mirage Delamore is a hyper-feminine, curvaceous Latina goddess, I like to call myself in a way, you know, just very feminine, very just, think of like Sofia Vergara, Jessica Rabbit made a baby, and that's that.
Love it.
Just very that. But outside of drag, I would say I'm very, not reserved, but I am very just, in a way, reserved. I'm reserved, okay. And just very observant and everything. I'm a little bit more shy, but when that barrier is broken and I'm comfortable with people, the Mirage just comes out. I mean, I guess I'm half and half. Sometimes I'm Mirage, sometimes I'm Alex, but the personality is always there.
Of course. So, well, you know, as Carbondale's not necessarily the first place you think about when you think about drag, Mirage actually was a part of Carbondale's first ever virtual First Friday last May when we had to all go virtual for our community. As usually on First Fridays, we're out downtown enjoying drinks, enjoying restaurants, dancing. But Mirage was a huge part of creating that feeling of connection and love and joy by performing for us through the Thunder River Theater's live stream. Was that your first virtual, like, Zoom performance because of COVID? And how was everyone feeling in the drag world when it was seeming that, okay, this is here, and in-person performances may be put on a dramatic hold?
That was my first actual, like, virtual performance, and I had a blast. It was very different from being in a bar or being at a restaurant and interacting with everybody. So it was something get adjusted to. And when the shutdown happened for performers, at least I can talk for myself, it was like, what's gonna happen? Like, we thought it was just gonna be a couple weeks, you know, we like just like probably 3-4 weeks and not that long, and then we'll go back and just probably it's gonna be tight regulation. But it wasn't like that, and we were just like, at least I had to think, I was like, are we gonna have to start switching everything to online? How is that gonna work? Like, Thankfully, I'm not a full-time artist, but I know there is drag artists that do this for their as a job, you know, and sure. It's like, how am I going to do my income from online?
Sure. Yeah. And that sort of energy that you normally get from being live in person is probably transformed a little when you're on a Zoom or something, because you have to sort of set up your background. And it seems like, is it more difficult to do it that way?
It definitely is, because being a live entertainer, you feed from the audience. You feel their energy. You get to emote and express with them, and you get to give them all your all. And sometimes at a Zoom, you don't see the audience that you're catering to, or there's pre-recorded, so you don't get to see what the person thinks about your performance, you know?
Right.
And it's very it's very, very, not difficult, but it's just very...
It's just different. Yeah, of course. And so I was actually lucky enough to host Carbondale's first ever drag queen brunch alongside co-hosts Gay for Good, Aspen Out, and Carbondale Arts. That was almost 2 years ago, with a friend of yours performing, Miss Candy Warhol. And through Candy, I was introduced to you, and then I was introduced to Lala. And it seems that when I was looking for a drag performer for an event and one of you was unavailable, that you all sort of were, you know, happy to share a piece of the pie with one another. Would you say that the drag community is usually this supportive, or is there that cutthroat mentality? Is that more of a stigma? Give us sort of a deeper understanding of the community of drag.
It really just depends on the entertainer and on the person, you know. There is performers that just really look out for themselves, and they're like, no, if I can't do it, then nobody else is going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'll just let them figure it out. But I feel like most of the queens that I've met in the Denver community are very, let me share my success with someone else. You know, I've talked to a couple queens. They're like, I have a list of people that I would recommend that are professional and that are going to represent me at a professional level. So I will for sure recommend them to others for them to get booked, you know. More of that in the community that I've seen. We all help each other, you know. We're all sisters at the end of the day.
Yeah, right. And especially during this time when, like you said, some of your friends and some of the drag queens are, that is their full-time job. So really, yeah. Anything helps right now. So, you know, I guess I was sort of surprised by that, because you see, you know, sometimes when you're watching things about, you know, drag, it seems kind of like it can be a little deeper. But I was really surprised by the love and support that you all show for one another.
Definitely about the community. Like, it always depends on the person.
I'm very impressed by your head-to-toe glam, your wigs, your outfits, your energy, just by following you on your social media. How many years have you been doing drag? And is it something that you see being a forever component of your life?
Actually, I do. And I've been doing drag for about 10 years already.
Wow.
I started when I was 15. Well, I've always done drag. I was always a little flamboyant little kid performing to, you know, Selena songs or The Little Mermaid.
Oh, love Selena.
Putting a sweater on my head and pretending I was, you know, them. But I didn't start like actually getting into the art of drag and going on stage and performing till I was 15. You know, that's when I figured out, oh, this is a thing, you know,
right.
You can turn this into a career in a way.
Does your family come and see your performances? Is that something that's sort of accepted and are open?
At first it took a while, at least for me, to get comfortable with it. You know, it was something like, oh, I don't know if I should tell my mother or my family about this. It was not embarrassment, but it was just very, just like, I don't know how they're going to receive it. When the barrier was broken, I mean, they loved coming to my shows. They always tell me, let me know when you have another one. Recently, my cousin had a small little party, and she invited me and two other entertainers to perform for them. And it was such a good, like, feeling, mm-hmm. Having the support of my family.
Right. And that must be like a deeper feeling of support, you know, rather than when you're kind of going on stage, you know, okay, these people made a genuine effort to be here for me. But it's almost like that support from your family is just something that, you know, you just can never take for granted. And probably, you know, something that not everyone that does drag gets to experience. So
definitely.
Yeah, so that's amazing. Tell me about your, you know, what does it take to like put Mirage together? What is a deeper understanding?
It really depends on how I'm feeling and how much time I have. There's times where I will give myself 4 hours to prepare, and that's me just being able to create a look, think of how I'm going to mm-hmm. do my eye makeup, or, you know, just get to sit around and feel the fantasy. That's how a lot of queens say. And that's when I just get to create whatever I wanted to paint that day. But if I'm more in a rush, I could take an hour, and it's just my basic standard face that I would do when I'm in a rush, just smoky eye, a red lip, and the regular.
right, the go-to. Okay, I see. Yeah, so I actually watched a tutorial by Lala, who is actually, you said, is one of your drag sisters, but is related to you. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. We watched a makeup tutorial that she was doing. She was about to perform for a birthday party for one of our mutual friends. And my daughter, she's 7. She loves drag. We were watching, and I was like, there's just no way I could ever replicate this. I mean, it seems so incredibly detailed, time consuming, and just it was really interesting to watch. And she made it seem so effortless.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of practice for sure. But I mean, once you get the hang of it, it's very easy. It's like paint by numbers in a way.
I love that. Well, okay. So as someone that watches a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I'm also a huge fan of Alyssa Edwards because she's a Texas girl and I'm a Texas girl, not to mention one of my favorite movies of all time is Tu Wong Fu. I know about drag mothers. Do you have a drag mother or someone that sort of helped you find your drag identity and your style? And if not, how did you choose that?
When I first started, I was not exposed to any other drag queen or any other gay person that would have been able to help me and guide me through the way. But luckily, I grew up in a generation where YouTube was just starting to become a thing. And I got to learn all my tricks and all get a little tip from drag performers that posted tutorials and things like this. There's a wonderful drag performer from Florida that posts, her name is Misty Eyes. And she would post how-to videos on how to, the etiquette of drag shows, what to do when you're booked, and how to do your hair and all that other stuff. So I would say YouTube is my drag mother. But after I was old enough to go into bars, I got to establish those relationships with my sisters that I call now family. And
yeah.
I would say if you want to start doing drag, I would say definitely, now that YouTube is a really big thing, it will help you a lot. It will help you with a lot of things, of knowledge about the art of drag.
Yeah, it seems that there's a lot of information out there and videos and tutorials and things now for, you know, those maybe the youth that are trying to figure out how can I step into this role. And that seems like a really easy, you know, go-to for them. How is drag connected in your everyday life? Like, do you just do performances in drag, or do you dress in drag for events, dates, things like that?
Once I take off Mirage, she is put in the closet and put away. I like to keep those two lives separate.
Okay.
Because I feel like once you start combining them, it starts taking over. And I like a fine line between Alex and Mirage, especially since I am in a relationship. I don't want to cross those lines between and have them just dealing with Mirage 24/7. It can be hectic.
Do you feel that when you're doing drag that does your personality completely transform, or are you sort of staying true to your personality?
It definitely does change. I would say I'm a little bit more confident. I can say things that I wouldn't say as Alex.
Mm-hmm.
I get to wear things that I wouldn't wear as my normal self. I would definitely say it does change a lot.
And do you, where do you find your outfits and things? We're going to get to your wig line pretty soon here, but.
It really just depends. I usually, since I'm a bigger gal, I do like getting things custom made. I'm lucky to have a boyfriend that is a seamstress.
Oh, wow.
I have friends that help me sew and help me get my look together. They are very fortunate to have that. But when I first started, it was just Amazon bodysuits and stuff like that. But luckily now I have the resources for the help.
Well, you always look fantastic. Everything you post, I'm just always blown away. And on that note, let's talk about your amazing wig line. You know, I see these larger than life handmade wigs that you're creating, right? And I think you call them Wig Wednesdays is when you post them. Tell us about that. And who are you outfitting and how's that going for you? Is that a part of your steady income?
Well, my Wig Wednesday started. I used to work at a hair supply store where they sold wigs, weaves, and every other thing that you could think of for your hair. And I was in that transition of drag where I just didn't want to wear flat wigs. I really wanted to, like, wear the big Alyssa Edwards Texas hair, but I didn't have the money for it. So I told myself, you know what, you're just going to sit down and you're going to start learning how to curl and style hair for yourself. And when I started being more involved in the drag scene, a lot of more of the entertainers were like, I like your wig. Can you do one for me? And I was like, yeah, sure. Give me whatever style you want and I'll do it for you. And it just went on from there. It grew. And I'm lucky enough to have worked with a lot of queens in state and out of state.
Wow.
And doing the wigs that I love styling. And wig styling is not my full-time job. I would say it's more of a part-time.
Okay. Yeah, and some of them are just amazing. I mean, one that you posted had all these chain links that went down to the floor. Was that something that someone brought, like a commission to you, like this is the style I want, or did you come up with that?
No, it was a commission that they brought me a picture of the artist that they wanted. I said, would you be able to recreate this? I'm like, oh, of course. When I saw the artist who originally had that wig on, I was like, I want to make it. If it's for myself or for someone else, I'm definitely going to try to challenge myself to create that chain link ponytail. And luckily, the customer came to me before I made it. So
absolutely incredible. Just amazing.
Oh, yeah. Let's get in that Friday afternoon mood. We'll stay tuned next week and hear all about Mirage's journey to Miss Drag Queen USA, I believe, going all the way. That was fabulous. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And now, coming up next, we have the ultimate bag girl, Laura Whitley, will be calling in, and she is going to talk about climate change. Hello. You are tuned into KDNK. Is this Laura?
This is Laura. How are you this sunny afternoon?
Oh, my gosh. So well. And your timing is perfect. You're tuned into KDNK, listening audience. It's a Friday afternoon. This is Express Yourself. I'm your host, Amy Kimberly, and I have Laura Whitley on the phone. And we're going to talk We are going to talk all about the Imagine Climate 2021. So, Laura.
I'm so excited to. Yes, go.
I mean, I guess, you've spent the last many months putting together an amazing package of thought-provoking installations and programs around climate change for the Community Office of Resource Efficiency, or CORE, as it's known. So, you know, as we've been so caught up in this life, in this pandemic times, climate change is still out there, and it's still changing and growing. It needs to be the conversation. And I feel that Imagine Climate does just that. Can you explain how you create this?
Sure. So you're so right to talk about the pandemic, because understandably it has overshadowed so much of what's going on in life right now. But climate change and social inequity are not going anywhere. And this year, our third annual Imagine Climate, we wanted to address both those issues. And we think that art is an incredibly compelling way to do that. Amy, as you know, you've been involved in building community around art for so long. Art has the power to harness emotion in the way that science alone does not. And so, you know, we could all recite all the scientific data in the world. And in fact, CORE is an energy nonprofit. We are a science-based organization, and we are very data-driven. But that's not what moves us, right? It's when our heart is touched and when things become personal and meaningful that they become powerful and we're moved to act. And so that's what we're trying to do with Imagine Climate.
And you've really hit on all the things that can touch us in many different ways. I mean, through music, through visual, through film. You have many, many collaborators. Can you just share a few of those collaborations?
Absolutely. This is, by design, a deeply rooted community program. You said many collaborators. We actually have something like 30 organizations, 40 artists, curators, and scientists, let alone our two dozen people on our advisory council and our sponsors. And that is intentional because it's going to take all of us to solve the climate crisis. I heard recently, this fight needs everyone. This fight needs everyone to do something. Everyone can do something. And that's what we're trying to do, is be really inclusive. And that's not just inclusive with the audience, but inclusive with the collaborators that we pull in. We want to have a diversity of experiences so that there's, you know, you're into music, we got something for you. You're into film, we have something for you. So some of those include, we're working with Carbondale Arts, participating in your visual art show, Nested Roots, a collaboration with CU Boulder's Nest Studio for Arts. And that brings together 16 artists and scientists. We're working with the arts campus at Willits to curate a soundtrack for climate action, and with 5 Point Film to create a custom lineup of climate films that people can watch from their living rooms. And so these are the types of programs that we try to bring together into one package in the entire month.
I know, and we get the benefit of it all. We can be entertained and informed all at the same time, which is a lovely, lovely way to get your information sometimes. You also have DJ Spooky curating something.
Yes, he is our kickoff artist. So DJ Spooky, also known as Paul D. Miller, is a multimedia composer and producer, a former National Geographic Emerging Explorer, and he is presenting Arctic Rhythm, which is this amazing synthesis of science and art. He takes the geometry of ice and the math equations that are contained within that and turns that into music. Mm. And so he is doing a video presentation of this performance with two local musicians, a cellist and a violinist, Rosh Cribbs.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see that performance. There'll be an artist talk, and then it's followed by a conversation on art and science that I facilitated with
two locals, architect Harry Teague and Micro Museum's co-founder Amanda Shockett. And
wow.
That is happening next Tuesday.
Right, the
at
second.
6 o'clock. And people can register at our website for that link. And like all of our programming, it's free. It's open to the community. And it's all planned in a way that's socially distanced, so that unlike last year, when we got canceled halfway through the pandemic, or the month of March, this show can't be canceled.
Right, right. And it really, I'm very excited about that one. So that's Tuesday at 6 p.m. Right now, people can go out and see Stories of Climate Change. They are on all the CMCs. I'm lucky enough to live across from one, so I've been able to watch the whole evolution and the opportunities and challenges that came with creating this massive, massive installation. That's was it three CMCs or four?
Three. Yes, three. We wrapped three Colorado Mountain College locations in Aspen, Carbondale, and Glenwood Springs in black and white portraits of folks in the community who had a story to tell about climate change. And this is a mural project that's known internationally as the Inside Out Project, which was founded by French artist J.R. And in addition to the black and white portraits, we have recorded the stories of folks in our community who had a story to tell about climate change, a personal experience about this notion that climate change knows no boundaries and the health of the planet affects and unites us all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. And I want to note that everything that is out there about this program is also in Spanish, which is wonderful.
That's correct. This was a bicultural program from the get-go, including from the very moment of envisioning the project and our advisory council. And so all of our outreach has been in both Spanish and English, and every program except DJ Spooky, we couldn't figure out how to do that one, are accessible in both languages. And so we're very sincere and earnest in our desire to demonstrate that this is an issue that affects us all. We are all the problem, and we are also all the solution. And so it's really going to take everybody coming together, and we want everyone to feel included and that their story is valid and that their actions are valid. So that's how we approached it.
Well, we're lucky to have it. Everyone can find out all the information at aspencore.org/imagine-climate-2021. And just real quick, we're going to have to jump, but you guys, you can play a scavenger hunt and win an e-bike. So it is really worth it to go to the webpage and see this wonderful month of activities and information and opportunities for all of us to really take the time to converse and learn about climate change, because it is here to stay, folks, and we have got to do our part. Thank
That's
you.
Great.
Thank
and
you.
So the,
yeah.
Yes. You're most welcome. You're most welcome, Amy.
Yeah. Did you want one last thing?
Oh, there is one last thing. I was going to say all our programming is going on through March. However, we had some challenges on the Carbondale mural site, which, you know, this right. happens when you do daring things like throw up mural projects in February,
yeah.
And Mother Nature is kind of batting last on this one. So that project is aging quickly.
Yeah, so get out there.
Really want get out there. Get it while it lasts, because that mural in particular might come down early.
So
Carbondale.
We appreciate all your efforts. So please do get out there and see these things. It's all in the weather. All right. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, listening audience. It is now time for Pulse of the Planet.
CarbondaleArts.com. and go to the exit.
I think, I was a minute early. I am just learning my way. But I do want to thank everyone that participated this week and every week. Artists. Keep your ears to the ground and your eyes to the skies. There is much coming up, you guys. We can see the spring. We can feel the, you can see the robins out there. And lots of lovely stuff. Here we go. Pulse of the